Yeah, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Happy Monday to you. That's John Lopez. I'm Reginald Atula. Figgy Fig look like he's about to go deliver a newspaper or spit a hot bar with a hot verse with Dr. Dre on the production. That's also what you look like right now.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, you do look like the hat that Eminem always be wearing around.
That is absolutely that hat. Oh, that is. You're right.
It's 100% that hat.
Yeah.
It's a comfortable hat, too.
Mm-hmm. Is it?
I can't wear a lot of hats because of my hair, but this one a little stretchy.
Okay.
So I could just... But very down,
good.
Yeah.
Very
yeah.
good. I'm glad that you didn't take any offense to that joke that I just threw at your way. Excited for football coming around. So excited that this exercise that I've been doing has been kind of satiating it. But also now it adds a different level of a, framework to mm-hmm. what we're going into on Wednesday when we get out there at NRG Park to see the fellas get to working. But as you may know, if you've been listening, and if you don't know, I'll let you know, I've been rewatching the 2024 Texans season, getting a little bit of a refresh of what happened during that season, getting some ideas of maybe some things that could spin forward for the Texans in the 2025 season. And I've reached my week 11 rewatch, Monday Night Football at Dallas. What do you recall from this one, Lopez?
That the Cowboys were a hot mess.
Correct.
Like
coming
just
in
an absolute hot mess.
That's right.
And it got worse even before the game started.
That's right.
Right?
The stadium was falling apart. That's right.
Crap was falling from the stadium rafters.
Yeah, someone almost got decapitated at some point.
Yeah.
Only half joking, like a big old sheet metal mm-hmm. fell from the sky. And then we started playing football.
And then they said, nothing to see here. It's all good.
The structure of the stadium is fine. It will not collapse as we're playing football. Get in here. Get in here and watch the football.
So those were the two big takeaways. And it was kind of a paint-by-numbers win for the Texans.
It did feel like that mm-hmm. in thought. Like, the final was 34-10. And as I'm going back to watch, I'm expecting, like, a paint-by-numbers win.
Yeah.
It's not quite what I saw
yeah.
in this game. We start with, this is the return of Nico Collins from that hamstring injury that we had talked about.
How'd that go?
Instant house call. instant screen house call.
Yeah.
However, it's negated by an ineligible man downfield on Laremy Tunsil. And I know, what is the feeling immediately when people hear flag on Tunsil?
Yeah.
Thank you. I knew you would hold me down there, Fig.
Yeah.
I have a defense for Laremy Tunsil. He was only 2 yards downfield.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I do remember they showed it a couple times. They actually discussed it, didn't they?
Like, he was only 2 yards downfield. Yeah. Like, he did engage with the linebacker before the ball gets there, but I mean, like, he's offensive lineman, dog. Like, that was unfair. That should have been a touchdown that immediately sets the tone mm-hmm. of that game, which is a little unfair. The offense was getting to the line with purpose early, mm-hmm. which is a real juxtaposition. Like, this very much felt like all the way across before I even get into that juxtaposition. This was get right. And we talked about it all week is, hey, this is the opportunity to beat up on a team that is not doing well. Get yourself right. It's very evident that in the room they were talking about this as a get right.
Oh, no, it was very evident. I'm glad you brought that up. You're triggering some memories now when you do this on your rewatch. It was very evident that there were some come to Jesus moments that week for the Texans, right? Like they have to be quicker. I think in the press conferences that week, D'Amico, or maybe it was Slowick, saying we had to get in and out of the huddle. We got to be ready to go. And sure enough, they did.
First drive. Yeah. It is just getting to the line, moving with purpose, tempo, up tempo, I should say, getting that to happen. And you can see it, man. It was showing up. Special team shenanigans starting to bubble up. I think you remember that in the middle of the season. You got, the likes of Boyd out there, doing some shenanigans. That's just the thing that I noted.
Yeah.
The Cowboys looked so weak in this game. Also, I just had to, they were not very good. One thing that was interesting to me, though, is there was, after picking up 11 on a 3rd and 14, they threw a screen. This is first quarter. Mm-hmm. They got to the Dallas 30-yard line. They went for it on 4th and 3.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a level of aggression early that didn't feel normal to D'Amico Ryans. I went back to my previous notes, the ones that I took in live in season, and I was excited about that aggression. But as I was watching it, I didn't feel that same feeling. And there was a number of times in this game where you had some of that same aggression. And I was like, were they that desperate to make a statement? And that also brought me just to, again, something I've kind of hit on a few times but not dug into.
Mm-hmm.
What do you feel about D'Amico Ryans' willingness to go for it at times, like his decision making on when to go, when to be aggressive, when to kick field goals? Because it felt very up and down all last season.
It did. But again, in this particular week, I just feel like they rattled a bunch of cages that whole week. I think this was the point in the season when they knew they were having some issues offensively.
Yes.
They knew that they're, you know, maybe the line and the system were not meshing. And so they changed things up. DeMeco talked about it, as we just mentioned. And I think DeMeco himself said, you know what? We've got to be more aggressive. So, yes, in a general sense, that might be one of the areas in DeMeco's game that we have to watch. But I think in this game, he said, screw it. We're going. We're going to be a different we're going to be a more attacking approach.
All right, I know we'll examine this further, I think, at another time, but I did want to ask a secondary question to that.
Mm-hmm.
Which DeMeco do you want as the head coach for this Texas team? Do you want an aggressive DeMeco or one that maybe leans a little bit more, I guess, conservative, for lack of a better term, maybe leaning on, especially if Kaimi is indeed the same dominant kicker that he has been, leans on that? Because we saw both versions of that last year.
I think most people, fans especially, want their coach to be aggressive. Sometimes, you know, it backfires. I think just in general, people want them to be aggressive. I just want DeMeco to be himself, to be sincere, not act like he has to go for it or not force himself to go for it in those situations, but sincerely feel like they can get it done. So that might be a little bit of a cop-out. Everybody likes an aggressive coach, but I just want him, if he's aggressive, I want him to be sincerely, you know, for the right reasons, doing those things.
Okay, fair enough. One more thing in the first quarter before I move on a little bit. This was a Stingley interception here. Mm-hmm. A Derek Stingley Jr. interception that was just kind of, I mean, just floated right to him. And it looks like the Texans just got a gift from Cooper Rush.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to posit that this was actually engineered perfectly in watching this again. Eric Murphy, sorry, that's a different one. Yeah. There's a blitz. So, like, D'Amico's blitzing a Cooper Rush that is a solid quarterback, but nothing to write home about. Mm-hmm. Knowing that that means he's going to get the ball out quickly. He's not a guy who's going to run around, create more time. He's going to get the ball out quickly. With that being the case, they call a blitz, and then at the same time, Jimmy Ward disrupts the CeeDee Lamb route to the point where it's borderline maybe a yellow flag should have came out. He disrupts the CeeDee Lamb route that is the most likely guy that he's going to get the ball out too quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Those two things mean that Rush gets the ball out quickly, and then he's throwing it into no man's land.
Yeah.
Stingley is positioned perfectly. It looks like it's just a gift. That is DeMeco Ryan's defensive coordinator extraordinaire.
That's scouting. That's tape. That's certainly knowing your opponent in the quarterback. No, I'll tend to agree with you. I'm trying to draw up that play in my mind and remember it.
It's on the left side. Yeah. I think there's like a trip. CeeDee Lamb is running what I imagine is like kind of a slant or a post.
Yeah.
Probably about 7 to 10 yards,
mm-hmm.
and just right as he gets to the top of it, right about 5 yards.
That's scouting.
Jimmy Ward gives him a good bump. He can't get past that bump. It just stops his momentum. Ball's already out, and it just falls right into the breadbasket of Derek Stingley, who in this game probably should have had 3 interceptions.
He had a couple more passes to fancy.
All over the football in this game. So shout out to Derek Stingley. But again, more importantly, shout out to DeMeco Ryans, who we all know it. Maybe we don't say it enough because we know it. DeMeco Ryans was in his duffel in this game. This is a play that I can't shake. This might be one of the most memorable memories of the entirety season. It wasn't a good one for the Texans. However, it was this touchdown, the only of the game by the Cowboys.
Empty backfield now for the Cowboys from their 36-yard line, 3rd and 10. Rush out of the gun, throws on the slant. He's got his man, Turpin, wide open, and he's running across the 30, 20, 10. Shot out of a cannon. What speed. Touchdown, Dallas, 64 yards.
And that happens because right at the line, playing press coverage, Jeff Okuda gets the hee-hee.
Yep.
Kevontae Turpin.
That one I remember.
Yeah, Kevontae Turpin gave him that footwork very fast as he's getting across, right? He just beats him at the line. Mm-hmm. And then once he's off to the races, part of this also, and I don't know how much I actually need to put on Kalen Bullock himself, but Kalen is a little slow in that secondary. Mm-hmm. I'm super excited because every time I see one of these plays where I go, ooh, I wonder if Kalen could be better there, it actually makes me happy.
Yeah.
Because I think that there's room for development, there's room for growth, and I know that growth is going to happen between
Noah DeMeco. And who else is going to be back there?
C.J. Gardner-Johnson.
Yeah.
Right? Like, all those things bring that together where I go, ooh, there's room for them to be even more devious as a defense because I think there's places for him to grow.
Yeah, this is where, you know, as you're rewatching and you try to spin it forward, you feel really good about things. You know, 64-yard touchdown there, you know, you think, oh, no. But you have the more experienced Bullock. You have C.J. Gardner-Johnson back there. I think when you spin it forward, you kind of feel good about things.
Some other things that go on as we move on in this game. And I think in the third quarter, Neil Hunter starts. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no Will Anderson Jr. in this game. And so Daniil is really doing what he can. He bends the corner really well, strong. and he just kicks Terrence Steele, the right tackle for the mm-hmm. Cowboys, kicks his ass, man.
Huge game.
Good game for Danielle Hunter. Yeah. And one of the things that really illuminates the fact that individually, Danielle or Will are really, really good. Mm-hmm. And then you have both of them at the same time, and you just, it's incredible what they're capable of doing. Stingley, in another opportunity to salute him, there is a play where CeeDee Lamb runs like a dig route. Mm-hmm. And we see this in one-on-ones. We'll see this here in the next week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. Yeah. One-on-ones is inherently unfair for a defensive back, especially playing, you know, man. Mm-hmm. Because if I can go anywhere on the field, it's just you're not going to be able to keep up with me. You already have the disadvantage of I know where I'm going and you don't, so right. you're reacting. Right. Then if I get a half step on you, I can just accelerate away from you. Mm-hmm. There's one of those types of plays with CeeDee Lamb on a dig route, just smooth across the field. Mm-hmm. And Derek Stingley, and I think if I remember, it's either head up or outside coverage. Really, you should be on his back and he should be able to get that ball and go. CeeDee Lamb's a fast guy. Yeah. He sticks with him. Yeah. The ball is caught and he tackles him damn near as soon as he's caught. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things that seems small, but a cornerback in man coverage by his lonesome, keeping up with a fast guy who is running away from him across mm-hmm. the field where there's not any help. Dog, he's so good.
Yeah, well, couple that with what you saw from Okuda. You know, a defensive back that can do something like that changes the entire sequence of plays in that situation.
Yeah.
You know?
And then in that similar vein, you get a Kadar Holman one-on-one with CeeDee Lamb, where not in bad position, CeeDee Lamb is just better, goes up for a jump ball. Mm-hmm. Again, we've talked about it a lot, not to, you know, beat a dead horse. Cornerback depth is going to be important. Is it a Kadar Holman or D'Angelo Ross or Jeff Okuda stepping in, or is it a guy that maybe you feel more comfortable coming in and doing what he does? Some other things that happen here. There is a big, big play. Here it is. Incredible stuff. This is a 32 here, Fig. This is maybe the most memorable play of the entire season for John Lopez. This is the one where the big man, fat man touchdown. Shout out Derek Barnett.
Rush in trouble. Strip sack. Who's got it? It's still loose. Texans pick it up. Here's Barnett on the run. 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown! Scoop, score, Derek Barnett.
He deserves so much love. We've talked about him as an undervalued, under-heralded guy.
Yeah.
That's a dude that beat the left tackle. Now, admittedly, the left tackle was a rookie, and he did not have a great season in Tyler Guyton for the Cowboys. Mm-hmm. But he beats him pretty smooth on the edge with speed. Knocks the ball out, causes a fumble.
It was bedlam. It was like everybody going in different directions.
Then it's caught by Guyton. Yeah. Petrie knocks the ball out again, and that's when Barnett then picks it up and goes for a score. Just a fantastic, we'll meet at the quarterback moment.
Yeah.
But the reason why I bring this up, in addition to, hey, you remember how fun that was?
Yeah.
Was that is the play that opens up the game.
Yes.
That is in the start of the fourth quarter. That is the play that opens up the game into mm-hmm. I think a 10-point game, or like, was that 27-10 at that point? But that is the play that makes this, oh, okay, now this is open game. Yeah. Up until that point, it has felt like a one-score game. It's either been or felt like a one-score game through three quarters of football against a not good Cowboys team.
Yeah, and
that's
kind of reachable.
That's the thing that got me, where I was mm-hmm. watching this and I was like, damn, okay, you turn over the football and you're not making something of it. You're not really blowing this up. Mm-hmm. So it was a get right in some ways. You ultimately get the score you won in 34-10. But even still, this was the insidious part of it, was that they were not able to really blow the doors off the Cowboys in the style and the play of the game. If I had taken off that score bug and just watch the game, you're like, this is the better team.
No.
But they're not a dominant force right now. And that was the thing that was concerning.
But that also, in a weird way, as we, you know, use these games to kind of project, you know, forward, that's also one of those things that maybe encourages you a little bit. The defense never went anywhere in this game. You know, the defense was making plays. We talked about Danielle Hunter, Derek Stingley, Jalen Petrie, you know, the scoop and score here. Just a little bit more efficiency offensively, a little bit more success offensively, and that does become the paint-by-numbers win, you know?
Yeah. Some other things. Can you give me 34 here? Because this also happens in the fourth quarter. And I remember the Derek Barnett. I did not remember this, but this was a big one. Hey, what's up, Petrie?
Down at the Dallas 30, Cooper Rush shotgun. Passes underneath. Ooh. And what a hit! A flag is down. Petrie, too much. Made it ahead of Schoonmaker, who gets right up.
And I think we all remember, that was not actually, it shouldn't have been a penalty.
No.
He just hit him so hard that they were like, hey, that's got to be a foul.
That's loud. We better throw the flag. That's really loud.
Now, to be fair, watching that in real time, you thought it was a flag. You're like, oh, but that's that. And then when you look at the replay, oh, that was clean.
Yeah, no, I thought that the same
was clean.
Yeah.
He hit him so hard. Okay, so one thing I did want to clear up, because you did say the defense was there. Weirdly enough, they didn't get pressure on this Cowboys offense.
Well, Danielle Hunter had. He had some, but they didn't
get consistent pressure. And I think that it seemed like that was something that they looked at where they were like, hey, Cooper Rush is not a great quarterback. If we get pressure on him, we can have our way with him.
Mm-hmm.
You would typically think, hey, this game isn't opened up and that's the offense's fault. A little bit, that was the defense not getting pressure, which again, I think maybe we can just chalk up to Will Anderson Jr. means something to this. But I was a little surprised that they didn't get continued pressure until really the fourth quarter when it was happening consistently. And then one more thing that I will throw in here as we wrap this up, or two more things. Remember, you have in the fourth quarter, probably about 3 minutes left. Actually, there's not an offensive touchdown until they get the ball back with 6 minutes in the fourth quarter, like left in the game.
Yeah.
Not an offensive touchdown in the second half. And then they go on we are going to run the football. We are going to make sure that we score here. Which it was like, all right, I'm glad that you could do this, but it was kind of disappointing that they had to force it in that way.
Yeah.
And the final thing that I'll throw out here is actually a Cowboys thing, but I think you'll understand why I say that.
Mm-hmm.
There's pressure on Cooper Rush in the fourth quarter again. This is when it starts happening. He climbs the pocket, and the play is they have outsides run and goes, insides, you know, 2x2, outside wide receivers run and goes, inside receivers run and hooks. One of those receivers is the tight end, Luke Schoonmaker. He runs a hook. He's just kind of sitting there. He has Azeez Alshire in coverage. Admittedly, not a great coverage linebacker, but right there on his back. And then as Cooper Rush is climbing, he throws it to Schoonmaker.
Mm-hmm.
Really good placement. Schoonmaker catches it with Azeez on his back. And I'm like, that is what a sizable tight end is supposed to be.
Oh, yeah.
I can use my body to shield a defender who is on my back and bring it in. And I don't feel like we've gotten nearly enough of that. The only guy that I feel like is capable of doing that right now, blocking out, is Nico Collins. And I feel like we talk about tight ends. That is one thing I'm looking for. Can somebody get somebody on their back and use their size to create an opportunity to catch the football?
Because they're going
to
be contacted, all that stuff.
Huge. Yeah. Plus, what I think that does is that will give CJ another confident guy to throw. If I know that, hey, he's there, he may be covered, but he can use his body to make sure that this ball gets there. I just seeing that made me long for it. Just seeing it for another team, I was like, damn, why haven't the Texans been able to do that? So, yeah, that was one thing I saw. A very, very – I mean, still – a good win, but one that left a little something to be desired, oddly enough, for me on a Monday night. But yes, a victory 34-10 nonetheless last year for the Texans. All right, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Somebody said, I don't care how they do it, but Dallas versus the Texans should be yearly.
Yeah.
I can get with that.
Yeah.
I can get with that, honestly. All right, coming up next, let's get into our lunchtime confessions as we always do. Next.
Real quick, piece of news. Before I get to my first confession, the wig came in. I got the Judge John Lopez.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, okay. Yeah,
very good. So we're going to do Judge John Lopez on
that training camp?
On day one training camp?
I think we'll be in studio.
By that time. So you're not going to look out. You're not going to be looking crazy in front of everybody
at 12:40? What time are we doing it? Or we can push it around.
I ain't doing it out there, I'll tell you that.
No, you got to do it out there, man.
Hell no.
Why not?
It ain't going to be that bad.
Wear a British wig out there at practice?
Yeah, man.
What are you trying to do to me? You think I'm a fool?
You know what? Let's do Judge John Lopez at the top of the show.
All right. Well,
the top of the show is crazy.
10 o'clock. Let's kick it off at training camp, Judge John Lopez.
All right. Well, I won't have a wig. It'll be sitting in my house. I meant to bring it. I forgot.
That's
I'll bring it tomorrow. We need to get one of those little styrofoam heads to set it on and just kind of put it in the corner until I use it.
Little mannequin head.
Yeah, a little mannequin head. so it flows beautifully.
Our coworkers are going to look crazy, man.
So, hey, we done had MD 2020 up here.
Yeah, we're not drinking Mad Dog. That's fair.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. All right, so my first confession, that just a thought occurred to me when I got on here, but I don't understand. I don't think this is you're just getting old guy thing. Do you guys ever go truly bar hopping anymore? Like, let me give you an example. Chatting with Sean Pendergast before the show. Said, how was the weekend? Great. How was the weekend? Great. What'd you do? Well, apparently Saturday, he had a couple things, knocked them out, and then he went bar hopping. He went to, his words, 8 bars.
Hey, yo, he went on, that's a pub crawl.
8 bars.
He went on a crawl, ain't it?
Saturday. Now, I'm not passing judgment because because if that's
feel judgy
thing,
to me.
Okay, if it feels judgy, fine.
Where the wig at?
But like, when I go to a bar, it's usually about the people and just the place and just chilling and taking it all in, the vibe and all that. Do you guys, is it just me? Do you guys, have y'all ever gone, when was the last time you went like truly bar hopping? Even if it's just like three places.
Usually, I have done it maybe football season.
New Orleans, you did it.
That is true. Did in
but
New
that's
Orleans
the last
with,
time?
With Sean Pendergast. Funny enough, we were walking through the French Quarter. I think we had gone.
But that's
to,
a different. I mean, in New Orleans, you do.
Yeah, because you can take it to go.
You ain't like to do that at the crib, like in the city
Houston.
You stay in, though, right?
Yeah.
College football Saturday, I will.
You'll go to different bars.
Yeah.
I don't get that. I mean, I'll do one or two. Hey, let's go look at this place or whatever. But eight.
Yeah, that might be that might be us getting old too.
Yeah,
that might be a thing getting old because like even when I was in my prime, I would do maybe like three at max,
right? Three.
Yeah, I wouldn't go to eight different places.
Well, and Sean's older than both of you guys.
We need one. I go to maybe two.
Yeah,
if we want to go somewhere else, maybe two. But I need to see. I need to sit down somewhere. And
I like
I'm
to kind of take
put.
It in, you know, just enjoy the vibe and the people.
Yeah, you enjoy
that
the vibe for a little bit. And you bounce to another one. Enjoy the vibe. Yeah.
And I don't have a problem with that.
But see, I would bounce if this bar was born. It's like, another place is popping. Right. Now I will go. Right. But I ain't about to leave from a popping place and be like, oh, let's go to another one.
Yeah.
And then another one. And then another one. Yeah. And then, nah, man.
Fair enough from the 929. I usually don't even want to go to the first bar anymore. It's funny because I am not inherently a bar guy myself. Mm-hmm. It is really more about people that I'm with.
Right.
We'll go and then we'll bounce around from, all right, this one maybe different vibe. Maybe there's more people coming in, what have you. We'll bounce around. But yeah, somebody said they went to 20 bars all within walking distance. 20 is a lot.
Man.
Maybe I thought eight was New Orleans or Austin, you know, or something like that.
No, that's fair.
Yeah.
On Washington.
Yeah, or Washington. But eight.
Yeah, I would bar hop, but it's more like four to maybe five.
Yeah.
Eight is like, that is what we're trying to do. You set out with that goal in mind, because eight is a lot.
It's a lot.
It's a lot of bars.
Yeah, and just imagine getting drinks at all of those bars.
Well, you kind
of
have to.
Yeah, so that's eight at least.
Mm-hmm.
I got to admit, I think that we're missing, and when I say we, I do include me, myself. I'm not doing the we thing where you kind of are just talking
people.
About somebody else. Yeah. I think we are missing the boat on the Dave Portnoy and Barstool deal with Fox Sports.
Are we? Help me out. I don't know.
I think there's been a lot of conversation about Big Noon Saturday. Big Noon Kickoff, I guess, is what the lead up show is.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one piece of programming. It can mean a lot, right? Like College Game Day means a lot to the general Disney ESPN situation. But I don't know how much you're knocking off the institution of College Game Day, even understanding that Lee Corso not going to be there after. I don't know how much. I think that, and I saw this last week in reading some of the ideas. This is a more all-encompassing deal. Obviously, Portnoy is going to be on Big Noon Kickoff, but Barstool is going to be providing daily content on FS1. Remember, FS1 just got rid of a couple of shows. I think it was The Facility and Speak. Those shows just got canceled. I think that that's the bigger deal. FS1 trying to make this channel, they've been tailing ESPN for a long time, trying to find their programming. It's turned over a lot. There's been a lot of jokes about how sometimes they'll put up 0.0s or whatever, and various kids' programming is beating them. I think the idea of bringing Barstool, doing the thing that ESPN has done a little bit themselves, of like, hey, we're bringing this thing that we know that works to some degree and just plopping it in our lineup to try and garner attention, like McAfee Show, which is on right now on our TV.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine doing that with the Barstool kind of brand and plopping that in for one of your 1 hour or 2 hour blocks. And now you have something that has a built-in fan base, a rabid fan base with Barstool folks. And I think that that is probably the stronger thing than, hey, we get this Big 12 kind of homer on the Big Noon Kickoff, which, don't get me wrong, I think that that matters. But I think what's the bigger thing is Fox trying to create this, get this guy that has this personality and has this like brand of things that has built content and has a huge social following.
Mm-hmm.
See if you can get that onto your TV network and use that as some level of jumpstart.
I agree. In all honesty, I don't think there are going to be any threat, even with Portnoy and whoever else, to the ESPN Saturday program. They're not going to be a threat to him.
I don't even see this as a, well, you use that as a lead-in for Big Noon Kickoff. Oh, no, people tune in to Big Noon Kickoff.
They'll change the channel.
I think people jump in for the game itself.
Yeah.
Like, especially college football-wise, the network doesn't matter as much. I don't think there's an allegiance in that way. We're just trying to watch this game.
Yeah, he's looking at games.
So like, that's why I'm like, I don't know how much that portion of it. I think the deal really is the bigger part. That might have been a throw-in, honestly. I don't know. I'm just speculating, talking on my keister. That might have been a throw-in. Well, Portnoy, we can put you on this TV if you want. Just bring us this block of content that we can have 5 days a week that will bring in, hopefully, some viewers, some additional eyes.
I got to confess, man, I think I'm losing my mind with this carpooling situation, man.
Oh, it's still going on.
It's still going on, man. I think I'm losing my mind because I feel like we're not really, or I'm not really organized with it. Because usually whenever I go to work when we all had our separate cars, I have like a plan where I wake up every day, I do this, I do
routine.
I have a routine. Now I feel like I don't have a routine. I feel like every night, every morning, I wake up like, all right, who's taking who to work?
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, like last night it was, I'm taking you to work. I'm going to drop you off and then I'm going to pick you up. And then turn around to, what time do you get off? Do you have anything you have to do right when you get off of work?
Oh, because she's got other things going on.
So I'm thinking like, what do you need me to, just tell me what you need me to do.
Yeah, we got.
All right, so what I'm going to do, I need you to drop me off. Oh. I'm off of site today. I need you to drop me off somewhere and then pick me up. And I'm just like, man, just take the damn car.
Do you be feeling like I used to when you were playing sports and you was just waiting for your mom to come pick you up? Is that how you be feeling?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I feel like wait and wait.
I feel like the kid being picked up last at school.
Yep.
Just sitting there. Now the teachers are sitting there with me. Yeah. I'm just sitting there like, like I have no idea. Let me call.
And the teachers want to go home, and you're just.
What's your name, young man?
Yeah.
What's your mom's phone number? Yeah. Let me see if I could call.
You say your mom was coming to pick you. Now they trying to treat you like you didn't. No.
What kind of car was it? A white car?
Believe me. Yeah. She said she was coming.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm kind of getting fed up now.
Oh,
and
man.
Then she kind of getting the attitude because I keep asking questions.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, just take the. No, just you drop me off.
We got to get you a vehicle, is what I'm hearing.
And then I'm tired of, do you have anything planned later today?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, man, just. Yeah. So I think we're going, I want to say next weekend. Not this weekend, but next weekend.
Oh, we picking it up? Yeah. Picking up the wheel?
We about to go looking, man.
Yeah.
But, I'm about to lose my bleep over this, man.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm not even organized right.
I get it. I understand how bad it is and how bad it was for the families involved. I kind of feel bad for Andy Byron. He's the CEO.
Oh, this the Coldplay CEO?
The big dude lost his job Friday after our show.
You feel bad?
I kind of, is it wrong?
I mean, it's not wrong.
I mean,
I thought generally as a society, we did not really cry for millionaires all that bad.
No, we don't. But that's the confession. Like, I get what he did was bad. I get that it went viral. I get that it's embarrassing for the company. I get all of it. But dude lost his job now, man.
It's not surprising that he lost his job for me, but the simple fact that he did lose his job, it's like, dang, he got just all this because he was on that Jumbotron.
No. All this because he was reaching the find out portion of the effing around.
Yeah. He got exposed. But yeah.
We act like he made one mistake. But he was stepping out with somebody at the gig.
But see, my thing is, if he wasn't on that Jumbotron, he would have still had his job. I mean, he still would have been a slime.
I kind of agree.
But
I,
it still would have been a fireable offense, even though he wasn't on the Jumbotron.
I agree with both of you, but I'm more leaning with Figgy on this. If they had found out the board or whatever, he's having an affair with the HR director, would he have been it's fireable, but would he have been fired?
Yeah, they could have said something like, hey, stop it right now, but
suspension,
for the simple fact is getting all of this attention.
Yes, that's why I feel
they got it. Yeah, you got to do something at this point.
I mean, probably maybe I don't get to that place because there's been, and this is the tough part, when something goes social or viral, rather, when social media, there's a lot of people talking about stuff, and I can't substantiate all this, but there's been a number of people that have said, oh yeah, I used to work for him, kind of a jerk. And so when I see enough of those, and he was out here doing a fireable offense, I'm like, yep, kind of caught that one, huh, buddy? Yeah.
Do you see
karma?
Yeah, I was thinking this. Do you feel like he might try to pull I guess I don't want to say a Tony Busby, but do you think he'd try to sue somebody just for putting his
Is he an American with big money? Because that is the American way. Litigation. Yeah, he probably will.
I don't know if he can sue Coldplay, but you think he can sue like Live Nations or something like that?
Well, generally the way these... because you know what?
Like, I'm sure he's fine. I'm sure he got money. He'll be fine. But
well, you've got half his money.
It seemed like this guy...
Well, that's a great point.
He can argue and say this ruined his life.
Yes. And generally, as you know, the way these lawsuits work is they start out by scatter shooting. They sue everybody. They sue everybody and then try to see what they hone in on. So maybe Coldplay.
Yeah, he can make a case that, hey, this ruined my life.
Yeah.
Please, I mean,
my life was just fine before this situation. Now I can't get a job anywhere.
I'm nobody's advisor, although I'm knowing that you got money, if you would like to try, hit me up. But, buddy, the thing that you don't want to do is sue crazy. Don't get too super litigious. We are all invested, and people will laugh at you.
Yes.
Like, you do not need any more bad PR than you getting out here and trying to sue Chris Martin and Coldplay.
They already laughing.
It can get worse. Yeah. That's the thing. Hey, it's already bad. How much worse can it get? Bottom still further.
I lost my job. I lost my wife.
Bottom is still further.
We going in guns blazing at this point.
You are not at rock bottom, buddy. Don't make the mistake of think that you're at rock bottom.
It does go lower.
It does go lower. All right, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Appreciate you rocking with us on this Monday. Coming up next, it's a Monday. Coming off the weekend, so get in your winners and losers of the weekend. 713-572-4610. Let's salute it next. Yeah, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. John Lopez, hustling. I'm Reginald Atitula, Figgy Fig, being propositioned by many a person on the text line and YouTube page. Everybody's invested in Figgy. This is how I know Figgy is the fan favorite on the show.
Of course.
Figgy threw out, man, I'm getting tired of this car. Everybody's like, I got a solution for you, Fig. Don't worry about it.
Somebody,
this is what you need to do.
Somebody said, get your rental car. You got all that money.
Everybody
first
trying
of
to,
all, I do not have all that money.
I don't know.
Money.
It looked like you hiding some money over there, dog.
Hey, we had a rental car, and that time was up. So that's what led to the carpool. That would have been the first option. If I could just rent the car the whole time, I would definitely do that.
So you wouldn't
get a driver.
Yeah, I know, right?
I would love to get a driver. Yeah, man.
Someone to shuttle both of y'all.
If I had the chance to get rid of my current car for that price and just have a driver, I would do it.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting.
That'd be great.
I hadn't even considered that. Anyways, that's not what this segment is about. Let's get some winners and losers of the weekend. 713-572-4610, who won, who lost on the weekend. And Lopez, I feel like we have a similar one in mind here, thinking about a little bit of golf, which I know you were locked in on. I wasn't as much, but I was very intrigued by some of the outcomes that I saw come out from it and some of the conversations that I think are worth having.
Mm-hmm.
Scottie Scheffler does it again. He wins the British Open, and he does it in style, too.
Well, he did it in dominant fashion, and where have we seen that before? And let me be very, very clear. Because a couple of months ago, a month and a half, whatever, we were talking about this, and I was the first one to say he's doing some Tiger-esque kind of things.
The first? The absolute first, huh? You're just going to pat yourself on the back like that?
No, I was saying, but I was, but I also
he's
said.
He's like, no, but yes.
But I also said he's not Tiger. He's, you know, he's not even close to Tiger.
Oh, yeah, I bristled at that notion generally.
But now you look at him, and again, I can say with authority because Jordan Spieth was talking about this, and you and I were mentioning in the break, like, he doesn't have the demeanor, he doesn't have the swag, if, you know, for lack of a better way, nor does he want it. You know, he's a guy that wants to go win golf tournaments. Remember last week he said, and we talked about it on this show, you know, I want to be so good at golf, I get so mad, I want to win every tournament, but it's not what fulfills my life. We mentioned this before the tournament even began, and then he goes out and kicks everybody's ass. And
he won by how many strokes again?
Well, was it three? Four? But either way, he's won three majors by at least three strokes. Like, it's not even – and he comes out on the first hole on Sunday and hits it to within a foot. And you're like, well, this is a wrap. And other golfers, you know, like Rory and Schauffele and Matthew Fitzpatrick and Jordan Spieth, they were all saying, like, yeah, we were playing for second. Where have you heard that before?
Yeah, that does. That feels kind of somewhat akin to Tiger Woods, and you start seeing little things that maybe allude to Tiger Woods and make you start thinking, "Huh, do we have to have some of this conversation?" Tiger Woods, between his first major and his fourth major win, 1,197 days,
mm-hmm.
Scottie Scheffler, between his first major and his fourth major win, which obviously the fourth was yesterday, 1,197 days.
Yeah.
Just kind of an interesting thing. Now, when Scottie Scheffler, when kind of the comparisons, because obviously they got to get back to him, like with people starting to do this, when they reached him, he said this, "I still think they're a bit silly. Tiger won, what, 15 majors? This is my fourth. I just got a fourth of the way there," which is absolutely fair.
Mm-hmm.
The question then becomes, can he remain in that level of dominance? Because one of the things I've often said about Tiger Woods is we've done the unfair thing of constantly trying to find the next Tiger Woods, mm-hmm. when in all reality, the reason why we loved him is because he's singular. Like, I think we did Rory a great disservice trying to be like, all right, time to be Tiger.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of pressure.
Mm-hmm.
When Tiger Woods, like, the whole idea is that he's anomalous, that you could take Tiger versus the field and feel good about it. That's not the way things are normally go, especially in golf where there's a lot of guys who are good at this who you can expect to pop up. Are you getting to a place where you feel like Scottie Scheffler versus the field? Because, again, it feels like golf is one of those places where there's a lot of good dudes. You can pop up and have a good space, but then you pop back down where someone else will pop up and have their time in the sun.
I thought the most telling thing of all on this British Open discussion was Bones. You know, Phil Mickelson's former caddy for 15, 16 years, saw Tiger up close and personal for all those years. Bones was on the broadcast, and he basically said, "I never in my life thought I'd see anything like Tiger Woods again, but here we are." And I'm paraphrasing, but that's kind of what he said. So when a guy who saw Tiger up close and personal, you know, puts it like that, it does make you think, you know, and he just turned 29. I think he just, like, even maybe last week or the week before, turned 29. And I think what the difference is, he's never going to be Tiger because of that demeanor and the swagger and all that stuff. But he does two things like Tiger that I frankly haven't seen since, you know, back when I was a tyke watching golf, you know, Jack Nicklaus. And that is, if it's a 10-foot...
Damn, you watched Jack Nicklaus.
I did watch Jack Nicklaus. I did watch that.
Was that the 1800s? That's crazy.
That's what you're getting out of this?
That's wild.
This man over here watching golf.
He was watching when they were actually woods, when the woods were made out of wood.
Yes, yes. And that is, if the putt is 10-foot or under, it should not be automatic. And I don't care how good you are, it should not be automatic. Tiger Woods made it damn near automatic.
Yeah.
This week, Scottie Scheffler, 10 feet and under putts, 59 out of 62.
Damn. That's really good.
That's beyond good.
That's going to be fun. He has
that
a chance,
absurd.
Chance to complete a Grand Slam now, as he's won three other majors with a U.S. Open win. So that's going to make the U.S. Open. That's now a storyline that is Scottie Scheffler induced for the U.S. Open. That's a thing that's also somewhat Tiger Woods involved, where you're coming into something and looking for what does this cat in particular do? By the way, 713 asks, any updates about Cameron Smith?
Actually, he did make the cut this week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he did.
Made the cut. Very good. Yeah. Some other things. Some other winners and losers of the weekend.
Cute. Hey, I won. I won $750 on my...
Where my cut?
You just glossed
right
over.
Did you see his eyes? Did you see his eyeballs?
He was so
upset.
You won what?
At the audacity.
You won what?
The unmitigated gall to ask for money in that moment.
The way he looked, he was about to say, bitch.
Check the tape from Thursday. I said one
Anybody
of my
checking that.
I said one of my dark horses that I bet on, Chris Goddard. Remember that, Figgy?
I don't, but I'll take your word for it, man.
If you say so.
Finish third.
Some other winners and losers of the weekend. And of course, the big loser, the astronomer CEO. It just kept coming up.
Yeah.
The entirety of the sports world embraced this. They kept clowning, old boy. Like, did you see all the people on various kiss cams reenacted with the significant other?
It's nonstop.
Wasn't the Philly Fanatic up here doing this at one of the games on Friday?
Well, they had the Coldplay.
They had the Coldplay kiss cam.
That some of these things, it just won't go away. It will not go away.
Like, just people. I don't remember the last thing that brought us together.
Yeah.
Like this. How sick does it have to feel to know that your demise is causing people like that level of unity? Like, we are in very divisive times. So everybody's like, wait, hold on. Put all that to the side. Did you see this cat?
Yes.
Can you believe him?
And I said on Friday that I just can't get enough of it. That hasn't really changed
it
over
hasn't.
The weekend.
You sent us a picture of like the Loteria, right? You sent us that.
La Sancha.
You sent us a picture, all sorts of pictures of you were very, very much having fun. A lot
I
of Photoshop.
I saw one of Fred Flintstone with Betty Rubble.
Oh, by the way, this is a great question here. That's wild. I just thought about what you said. Rob Torres brought something to my mind. if you were going to do a Photoshop that was Houston sports built, what would be the two parties that are hugging up on
each
other?
Oh, boy, I don't even want to.
Because Rob brought up Easter B holding Bill O'Brien, and that's kind of a good one. That one's kind of good. Some other ones, winners and losers. Can I give you a winner being the 2025 NFL Flag Championships? The Texas Fury Texans, mm-hmm. high school girls division, went champion out at Austin, Texas. Mm-hmm. They beat the Bad Rabbit Cowboys 19-0 to win the championship. That is some Houston, Texas championship behavior this weekend yep. that happened. This is what the ladies sound like after victory.
Texas Fury just won the national championship representing the Houston Texans.
Super Bowl, here we come, man. That's a sign.
You feel like it? There's a lot of Houston winning things.
Yep.
I mean, I don't know. I don't think you watched this game. Did you? Like, it was on ESPN, so yeah, I had it on. Yeah. Speaking of highlights, there was a girl who had the two foot toe tap in the end zone. Yeah, they was hooping, man. They were playing really well. Also within that, on the boys' side, the boys' high school division, it was the Jaguars or Jacksonville Elite, something to that effect, the Jaguars affiliate. Mm-hmm. I will say there was a kid who made one of the greatest plays that I've seen. Do we have the audio of this cat making this catch? And listen to how excited everybody gets about this one-handed, over-the-top backhand catch that he makes for a touchdown.
Well, no reason not to go for it here. Gets rid of it into the end zone. Right, one hand. Wow! Bryson Wright with his spectacular grab.
I don't know that I've seen a catch that's good.
That's yes. I don't either. I don't know either. It's been a pretty eventful week on those things.
Like, he gets bumped on that catch. Mm-hmm. He's over dude's back. This is like backhanded, one-handed grab in the air. I did not realize I like flag football like this.
No, it's fun. It's absolutely fun, and it's going to get a lot more fun because the NFL's backing it up, and it's going to be in the Olympics.
Yes, it will. Yeah. Some other winners and losers of the weekend. Arm cannons. Did you see Ronald Acuna Jr.?
Oh, I think this was the most casual... That was the most casual, greatest throw you'll ever see.
I think this was Friday. He's out in right field. I mean, just it's a flyout by Cody Bellinger flyout. Mm-hmm. And Jorbit Vivas is tagging from second, just going to third. Second to third. This dude is out in right field on a fly, straight into third base, tagged out. This is the only 300-plus foot outfield assist on the fly in the last five seasons.
It was unbelievable. And it looked like as if he was just going to be throwing it to the cutoff man, like casually, like conceding.
Yeah, he didn't look like he was you've seen a guy in the outfield look like he's like putting everything into it.
And then it went all the way. And that was only one. There were several. There was another one this weekend where you can. And by the way, even in the Astros game, there were some great plays made at the plate. You know, the Astros on some of the cutoffs and such.
Agreed.
Yeah, there's some really good plays.
Which is, I mean. Yeah. I don't like saying it, but it does feel a little bit out of the norm, but it was good to see. Those are some of the winners and losers of the week and various other people say loser Kelsey Plum. Oh, people are talking about this, Kelsey Plum. Can you got this audio? This was after the WNBA All-Star game, which I would actually say a winner is the Stud Buds. If you're not a WNBA fan, I get it. But like there's a couple of women, Courtney Williams and Natisha Heidemann, who had a 72-hour stream. The kids are doing all these damn streams now, man. But I thought this worked really well for the All-Stars because, you know, they had a level of coverage on social media, and it was humanizing all of these players just out there having fun, including Caitlin Clark, who was having a ball. She was out there turning up with them. They had the commissioner of the league out there dancing at a dance party, which was weird because they're in the middle of what is about to be a labor dispute. But this is Kelsey Plum talking about something that got notorious, which was some shirts that said, pay us what you owe us.
Yeah.
They wore those before warm-ups of the All-Star game. This was Kelsey Plum after the All-Star game talking about those shirts.
That was a very powerful moment. We didn't, at least as players, we didn't know that that was going to happen. So I think it was kind of like a genuine surprise. But the T-shirt, just United Front, was determined this morning. That we had a meeting for, and you know, not to tattletale, but zero members of Team Clark were very present for that. But no, we were just we had a very
that really needed to be mentioned.
I'm trying to make a situation light. Okay,
what was she?
I think she was trying. So a lot of people have taken this to like again, the context of the league and people are going, oh, well, this is attacking Caitlin Clark. Caitlin Clark was the team captain of one of the teams. They did the draft thing. Thing is, especially they didn't split All-Stars into East and West. It's just like, this is the draft. So there was team Nafisha Collier and team Caitlin Clark. That's what she was speaking to. So like the idea is only one of the teams, Collier's team, kind of made the decision. But I actually think that that is the bigger problem, like, of this statement, is that you guys are headed into a conversation where you're going to try and do your CBA thing. I don't think that any move that you make as a team, you want to put out there as this was haphazard and we did not consult the entirety of our group. I think that is the part of this. That's the part of this that got my attention. I was like, oh, so you were leaning into the idea that this is very hasty. I don't know that that's a good look in the general public.
Not that
you're doing your negotiation in the public for this, but I imagine that does not help when you get to the table arguing with the WNBA.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of it like that. It may be important. It may not be quite as important as you're portraying it, just because I think ultimately they are going to be on the same page. You know, they are going to be have everybody on the same page there.
Yeah. But in a time period, we're talking about labor unions you know, portions of them not knowing things, jumping out there and being like, hey, yeah, we didn't even talk to everybody when we got out here and did that. I was like, the perception is probably not good. So I don't think she was attacking Caitlin Clark. I did think she put her foot in her mouth, though. So there you go. That's the winners and losers of the weekend here in the Loop on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, the Astros IL list is getting really high. Are they in a place where they have to make a deal in order to contend? 713-572-4610. Let's discuss it next.